Thank you. Well, I thought this is kind of a complex thing, so I thought I'd outline a little bit about what I'd like to talk about. But I would like to thank you all for being here. Thank you all for coming out for this. It means a great deal, and I really appreciate having you all here. So I completed the certificate program in November, and my project was on therapy haikus. And so what I'd like to accomplish here tonight is talk a little bit about what is a haiku, and how did this process begin for me? Why did I decide to make this my project? And then I would like to talk about what was it like for me during this project, because there were some huge changes that I went through while I was doing this. And then I'd like to talk about how did the world and the relationship channel influence and create direction for this work? And then what I learned from all this. So mainly I'm telling you a journey of discovery that was personal discovery for me. And it was discovery about haiku, and it was discovery about therapy, process work therapy, and it was a discovery about vulnerability and finding parts of myself that had been left behind years ago due to trauma, and recovering those parts. So part of this presentation tonight is going to be theoretical, and then we're going to move into the more personal aspects of it. So I'm going to start with the theoretical part, and we will have a question-answer period at the end. And I want to talk a little bit about what is a haiku. Now, there are traditional haikus, and what I have done in this particular project is I have done what's called pseudo haiku. They're not really following all the traditional rules of haiku, but I'm still going to explain to you the traditional part, because when I teach a class on this, I teach that too. So a couple of ideas about haiku is haiku should have a reverence for life and living, to write from the knowledge that even the dead are alive, and that the ugly has something beautiful in it, that even darkness will change to light, is the haiku spirit. Haiku has humor, and there's a delight in wordplay and puns and the comic of life. Haiku can be written on any subject, as long as the writer refrains from being demeaning or sarcastic. Now, for some people, haiku can seem too cool or too heartless or too objective, because when we talk about haiku, we're talking about sensory grounded information mainly. But there is a form of haiku called tanka, which I cannot go into all of this tonight. But there is a tanka form which allows the addition of subjective feelings, emotions. And in general, traditional haiku does not have feelings, does not have emotion in it. It's more about sensory grounded information. Okay. So writing haiku is a discipline. And if you're interested in haiku, that's your spirit calling for more discipline in your life. It means you're seeking more discipline. So go for it. I love this. This is not mine, but it's from a writer on haiku. I've got to share this with you. Go for it. Make rules for yourself and follow them exactly, or break them completely. Outgrow them and find new ones. We're all students, and no one really knows how to write a haiku. That, however, does not stop us from trying. So that's just, I also want to share, especially for you all in the intensive. I was in the intensive in 2011. When I wrote my application for the certificate program, One of the lines that I put in my certificate application was, "All of my life, it has been important to me to do the right thing. In fact, this may be my greatest problem. I'm working on this." So part of the thing about haiku is taking the opportunity to break some rules, to take some structure, to take the syllabic structure, which I will go into that a little bit more, take the parts that are helpful, the parts that helped me create discipline in my life. And then as this all unfolds, this whole project, it will be more apparent about why I made this choice. So, traditional haiku. In traditional haiku, we're just going to overview this a little bit. They have a reference to a season. Reference to a season, and they contain sensory grounded information. Things you can see, hear, touch, and smell. And these could be everyday things like a tree, a raindrop, a coffee pot, a bridge, a puppy. And when you begin to write haiku, it's something very special happens. You begin to see and hear and observe more because your being is being trained to do that. So you're opening up, your powers of observation tend to increase. So you also may discover, which I did, your mind opening up a lot more. So suddenly, it's like if your eyes or your mind had a certain focus or view on the world, it's like a kaleidoscope, and it shifts. A kaleidoscope, everyone knows that? It shifts, and then it shifts again, and it shifts again. And each time you go back in to do some editing, there's a shift. It's just amazing. It creates huge energy. Very energizing. So in haikus, traditionally haiku, there is something called a cutting technique that's used. And the cutting technique, it takes the form of a colon or a dot, 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 or a dash. And what the cutting technique is all about is it separates the haiku. So a haiku is three lines long, one, two, three, and it's five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. So when I did this project, I took lots of liberties, but I did stay with the syllabic. Five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. That, for me, was the discipline. So generally, the way the cutting technique works is it divides the haiku. So you generally have two sentences, two lines that are related, and one line that's not related. They're independent of the of each other. They can each stand alone, but they are connected. So I'll give you an example. Fragile green budding emerges with the morning. Moments are passing. Fragile green budding signifies spring. You don't have to say it's spring or fall. You can just use something like baseball, summer, right? Fragile green budding emerges with the morning, dot, dot, dot. It's cut there. Moments are passing. So moments are passing can stand alone. Fragile green budding emerges with the morning can stand alone. So let's see now here. So these are the more traditional form of haiku. When you write the more traditional form, you do have the three lines, you do have the 5-7-5 combination, you do have reference to a season, you do have a cutting technique that divides the poem in two so that each part can stand independently and yet they are related. That would be more the structure of it all. But as we talked about before, haiku is also about breaking the rules. So I wanted you to know the more traditional structure, but then I'll tell you where I have decided to break the rules or not. So when you write haiku or when you compose haiku, it's up to you. I chose to work with process work concepts. I decided to take process work concepts and turn them into haiku, and I'll explain to you why I did that. Now, the ways that I broke away from traditional haiku is I put titles on. Generally, you don't have a title. I put titles because I wanted to be able to say, well, here comes something about. And I call my haikus haiku for as emotional resource, coloring outside the lines. So you will have handouts if you want them. When I talk about using haiku as a form of meditation, I'm speaking from experience. I felt inspired to write some haiku. This was the first haiku I ever wrote, and it was written in 1971. It was written in a creative writing class, and I had not written another haiku in 40 years. I wrote that haiku. I wrote several in that class, and haiku was like off the radar for me. I never even thought about haiku. And then suddenly, I started studying process work, and I started therapy. And I realized that some of the things I was learning in process work seemed really ridiculous. They seemed like outrageous. I didn't even know if I could do any of these things. They just seemed like funny. Not commonplace. And so what I did was, particularly, this project is about my therapy. I haiku'd my therapy. Okay, the reason I decided to haiku my therapy is I was getting this absurd homework from my therapist. And it was like, what? You want me to do that? I worked in the corporate world. And I was getting homework that was saying, like, make mistakes. I had studied projection, and I didn't really think it was a good thing to consciously do. And my therapist was telling me to do that. So because this work, these assignments seemed so absurd to me, for some reason my brain, I was driving to work, and my brain started thinking in haiku. So I started taking these homework pieces, and because they seemed so crazy and they were making me laugh, and I will share the ones with you, I decided to turn them into haikus. I don't know why I did that. I don't know what compelled me or impelled me to do that. I think it was partly because I wanted to remember them, and somehow the absurdity of them made me go in the direction of poetry. Now, one of the things I love about haiku is it's only three lines. It's only five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. So what you can do with haiku that's so much fun is you can get in and out. If you have a like compelling thought, if you have an image that you want to remember, something that's really important to you, or something that's really disturbing you, you can get it down really fast. You don't have to journal and journal and journal and journal. It's like laser journaling. You want to remember that. It touched you. It affected you. So you write a haiku about it, and you can capture that without writing and writing. So when you journal, of course, you go in and you change, or you write and write and write. With haiku, the way I approach this project is I started writing haiku for my therapy experiences and my internal changes that were going on within me. But then I'd go in I'd go back in and I would think, I would reread them and I would think, that doesn't quite capture it, and I'd make some changes. So I'll talk with you about that, making changes. I stuck to the three lines and the 17 syllables, and that was my container for expression, okay, of these weird process work concepts I was learning. Flirts were the things that caught my attention. They were flirts. Because I felt it was okay to write about feelings, because haiku generally writes about the natural world, and we are part of that. We're part of the natural world. We're organic, and our feelings and our thoughts and our emotions are also part of that. So I chose to use haiku for that, because it was so short and so easy and convenient. Now, when I started doing this, I mean, I would be driving to work and I would begin to think in haiku. I would notice something and the syllables started forming. But also some things would happen and I would want to capture that, and I would think, oh my gosh, I got to haiku that one. Or I'd be driving by something really beautiful, and a visual, and I wanted to capture that. Something about the three lines and the 17 syllables makes it really much easier to do. It's not something you have to put off. I wrote two haikus today in class. I should share them with you because I'm in a relationship seminar, okay? Screw this exercise. I can't even be bothered with it. Enough for today. That's a haiku. No teachers are here. Okay, here's another one I wrote today. Sharing so deeply makes me even wonder more about what's yet to come. Somehow it gives me a container to capture something that's happening within me. So I kind of relate also haiku, a really good first aid thing, because I'm sure many of you have heard of and are familiar with emotional intelligence. And I think of haiku as a great thing to have around when you don't have emotional intelligence. You're missing your emotional intelligence and you're looking for some first aid. So you haiku. And I find using haiku as a emotional resource, is this a gift? And at this point, haiku can become a bridge. For me, it's a bridge to express what's going on with me. There's no critic. There's no critic. You know why, for me, there's no critic? The critic is really busy trying to figure out the syllables. The critic's working on the 575. So you've got the critic's got a job to do. I got to mesh this thing that she wants to say into 575. And while the critic's busy with that, I can be so creative, so outrageous. It's really exciting. Okay. All right. So how can this become meditation? When I get into more of my therapy process that I'm going to share with you, I found as something was pulling me into haiku, I followed it. It was a flirt, the whole idea of haiku. I followed it. It was easy. It was convenient. I think I needed more discipline in my life. So when the haiku, like the one, two that I just read to you, they're not complete. They need to be tweaked. Sometimes I have written haiku that is perfectly great first writing. I'm really happy with the work. But I don't expect to be. I expect it to be more like a journaling thing. I expect to go in and reread it. Because for me, my haiku became my friends. I would read the haiku, and then I would go home let's say from work, and I'd pull out my haiku, and I had, I think for this project, I turned in like 35 or 40, maybe 50, and I would go and I would read what I had written, and I would think, wow, that's just not strong enough. Wow, I must have been really shy when I wrote that one. But that didn't at all say what was going on for me. And when I give you the history of this project and when the World Channel got involved and I got really pissed off and really angry and hostile even, and then there's times when the critic was attacking me and I had to fight back, you'll understand why you go back in and make changes. But it's up to you. You don't have to. I do. So haiku emerge from within you, and they begin to move through you as you develop them. This is where the meditation part comes in. So you let yourself feel the message coming from inside of you, and you can work with haiku as you would a problem. So with that in mind, you're working with haiku, your own haiku that you're creating, as if it were a problem. And you may want to feel like you'll go in and change, make some changes. And then sometimes the first words are perfect. But for me, often the words are more like a garden that I work and I cultivate and I nurture my words, helping them along to grow to full expression. What is most important is trusting yourself, because you'll know when you're done. You'll know when you're poem is complete. When you're experiencing conflicting emotions and you're really confused, is a great time to write a haiku. A haiku can become a form of journaling that helps us to see different parts of an issue and different parts of ourselves. They can become expressions of beauty, of anger, fear, sadness, or anything that you're feeling. And they can embody changes. So I'm going to share some of my own personal, you know, very deep, revealing haiku with you, so you'll get a better sense of what I'm talking about. But the important thing to remember about haiku is it's only 3 lines long, it's only 17 syllables, and so it makes it easier to do this with a light heart. It's easier to get started. So let me see now here. And I'm going to show you some where I've made changes and some where I've taken a poem and taken it from one step to another step. So how did this process begin for me? I decided to do it because I decided to haiku my therapy. So I will show you some of that, including the ones that were really important. Okay. I'd written a few haiku before I wrote the first one. I have decided to haiku my therapy. I think it'll help. Feelings. Feelings. Can I handle this? Feelings come and feelings go. Maybe I can. Okay, this poem changes started out as... a year before. Discontent inspires change. There is an upside to this new cycle of growth. So when I read that back, that's how that started out. Discontent inspires change. There is an upside to this new cycle of growth. I can feel the hesitancy, the wanting the upside to it. I can feel, isn't there? When I got to it, really understand how I felt, which took about a year, I thought, I don't want more change. I don't want more change, but I can't seem to stop it. I too have seasons. And I feel that that's a much stronger place that I grew into with that poem. That poem grew with me. Okay, I want to show you my first ones. Oh, this is one I wrote in the intensive last year. Okay. I was thinking about, my therapist is Alexander, who many of you know. And I was thinking, you know, a therapist can do so many things to help you to feel, to learn, to love and grow, even to live. However, you have to be willing to do the work and make the jump. No one else can do it for you. I wish it was different. And then I feel such gratitude to my therapist, Alexander, who met me at the edge and gently held the space for me to discover my extreme baby. I will talk with you a little about that. I wasn't going to reveal that part right away. It kind of slipped out. Okay, a therapist is like a parachute. Better than free fall, having a good therapist, you land more softly. So, how did this process begin for me? I got this crazy homework. A confident heir. Do you know heir means mistake? Yeah, heir means mistake. But a confident heir would be, you know, walking with confidence. Therapy homework. Make lots of mistakes this week. Get it wrong. Screw up. That was my homework. I had to haiku that. It was so absurd. Here I am working in the corporate world. I'm working in the corporate world where you do not make mistakes. You know, everything is recorded and you just don't make mistakes, especially in healthcare. Okay. And projections too. Project it outward on everyone. Everywhere. Taste forbidden fruit. So those two got me going. Those two got me on my way. I decided the absurdity of them deserved a haiku. So, what was it like for me? Okay. When I started this process and I would get these kinds of things, I was trying to take something that was complicated for me and I was trying to look at it with a lighter heart. And I was trying to capture the essence of it. And I was also trying to integrate it. And I realized that the deeper I got into therapy, the deeper I got into process work, I was discovering different parts of myself, really marginalized parts. And in order to work deeply with all of this that I was uncovering, I felt that haiku was a good way to allow the marginalized parts to talk. So what happened eventually is, and this took a while, I mean, I worked on this for about 18 months. I wasn't doing a certificate project at the time, I was just writing haiku. But what happened is, I started having a group process within me that was coming out in haiku. So my haiku started to become a group process. And it was amazingly relieving. I would sit there, anytime I was upset or confused or thoughtful or touched or sad or lonely, I would write myself a haiku. And it was exactly like doing a group process with myself. And the content and the variety of some of these poems clearly depict that I was doing an internal group process. I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know why I was doing this. So I would like to share some of that with you. Okay. Now, a lot of you know me, that I like stuffed animals. you've seen me drag this bear around or something along. Okay, that was not always the case. I was not a stuffed animal person at all. I'm weaving the process work into this project now as we talk. I'm moving from theory into personal. So I came into process work through Rivers Way, and I'm a corporate person. I'm not a stuffed animal person. I never even owned a stuffed animal, maybe when I was a baby, but I don't know. And so I'm into my corporate world and, you know, doing things that way, and I don't even think I have an inner child in me. I certainly, if I do, I'm not about to show it. So I was in therapy for about, let's see now, I think I made a note of it, 4 months. Okay, I was in Rivers Way right here. And I had a health issue that was really serious. And so I started getting really serious about therapy. I wanted to know what was going on inside of me. And I was willing to do the work. So I was about 4 months into therapy. I was pretty committed to this weird thing, process work, because it was interesting, if nothing else. And I remember Alexander asking me a question, and I don't remember the question, but I'm sure it had deep significance for me at the time, because I was standing up. I think this is my recall of it anyway. I was standing up in that Rivers Way clinic, and I reached over and I grabbed a lion and I clutched it to me. And I'm not a stuffed animal person. I'm like a corporate person. And suddenly I'm grabbing this stuffed lion and saying in my secondary process, well, if you want to answer to that, I need help. So I wrote about that. And I wrote, I was seeing Alexander at Rivers Way. Fortunately for me, the Tao picked him to be my therapist. After about 4 months of working together, the stuffed animals began reaching out to me, silently flirting with me each week. It was so annoying. Those baskets of animals? It was so annoying. Here I am trying to concentrate on all the stuff we're doing in therapy, and I've got these baskets of animals calling to me, come, you can have us, you can touch us. And I'm trying to ignore it. So finally, I could take it no longer. And in my secondary process, I suddenly reached out and I grabbed a stuffed lion, clutching it to my chest. What a relief. So I have a haiku for that flirt. It beckoned to me. I followed it, unfolded it, and found the treasure. And that would apply to any flirt, but in this particular instance, the treasure was immense. The treasure was the trust to be able to allow this incredibly vulnerable part of me to act in the world and reach for something. I want this. I need this. If we're going to go further here with this discussion, I need some help. I want this lion. So I wrote a haiku for the lion. The lion, alert and aware, faithful and fiercely watching, ready to protect. Okay. So now we're on a stuffed animal roll. There's an office here, a lot of you probably know where Don and Jan go, and this is a bear, but they have a monkey in there, a bear holding a monkey. So I walked in, now this wild child is released within me. Who knows, she's going to grab some animal of some little kid's hands or something. I don't know, I'm concerned. I've got this wild child now. And so I went into that office for a therapy session, and I see this, it wasn't a bear, it was the monkey. And I walked up to it, and of course I grabbed it, because, you know, I've got this wild child. And I had to haiku that, maybe a hug? This is too tempting. Can I hold this stuffed monkey? Oh, that feels so safe. So then I went out and I bought myself for Easter a pink stuffed bunny. This pink stuffed bunny brings to mind a precious child lost so long ago. Now, I bought this for Easter for myself back in 2010, and I would go to work, and I'd go to therapy on the way home, and I would stuff it into my computer bag because I didn't want anyone to see it, you know? And then I'd go into therapy, and I'd pull out my bunny, put it back in the bag. Now I walk through the street with these things. Okay, here's one I changed. Let me not let you read that. Okay, we'll just look at the picture. This is me. This is like so me of the natural world. This was a poem that said, it was called Spirit Guardian. It said, treat her very well. She sheltered your hopes and dreams through the stormy days. This is another figure. This is not the child. This is someone else. Treat her very well. She sheltered your hopes and dreams through the stormy days. Before I turned this in, I had to change that. I looked at it and I studied it, and I had made some changes, but this was my final change on that one, which shows my changes. Where did she spring from? She who held my hopes and dreams through the fiery days. Where? In this, you know, as I'm in therapy, I am going back over a life that had a lot of trauma in it, a lot of repressed emotions, a lot of repressed memories, and they're coming up, and I'm working on them, and I'm dealing them, and haiku's helping me enormously. And suddenly I get to this point where I wonder, where did she spring from? And this is like my nature self. I don't know, but I know she was there, and I'm so glad. Okay, so the relationship and world channel jumped into the mix here somewhere. Let's see. Oh, I have to share this one about the edge for you guys, with you all, because we talked about the edge. I'm in relationship residency right now. We talked a lot about the edge today. Gently near the edge, softly encourage, support. There is lots of time. I'm sure my cohort gets that from okay. So, let me see. This is the light part too. This is the light part. I took the foundations class with Suzette and Salome, and we did this vision quest, and I wrote this poem called Playground. Nature calls to me, oh, happy day, I'm coming. We can play today. Because I don't want to act like there isn't the wonderful times, the easy days, the days of sunshine and wonder and warmth. Home, whispers in the night, secret voices telling me, listen to your heart. These are the moments when everything just flows. Thank God for them. I wanted to capture that too. This was a haiku. I started getting so into my haiku that this one, I wrote this sometime in the night, and I do not remember writing it. I awoke in the morning to record a dream. Instead, I found this haiku written on my bedside table. I had written it sometime during the night, and in the morning I added the title Mystery. I don't remember writing this. Mysteries of the night awaken me to listen to tales of power. So that's kind of why haiku is sort of taking over my mind. A couple on the critic, okay? Let sleeping critics lie. Who woke the critic? We need to change the channel. This is just too much. Couple more on the critic. Critics return. Here it is again. This criticism, this doubt, I've gone unconscious. Fighting back. Who is saying this? Get to know this edge figure. Stand for who you are. This is a show-offy one, next one. Showing the critic. So, you think you're right? And that you know everything? I can break up clouds. Do you all know how to break up clouds? Do you all do that? No? Is it general? Yeah, you know, right? Yeah. It's if you've never done it before, you have to try it. You can break up clouds on a sunny day. You go out and you just look up at the sky and pick a cloud that's not too dense, one that's, and just stare at it and it will break up. It'll move, it'll break up. You can break up. Yeah. So I'm telling the critic how powerful I am. Here. This was, you can imagine the mood I was in this night. Now, open the door now. An internal group process. Let's hear them all out. The great thing is you can do this. You can do it. This is the way you can deal with internal conflict. Let's hear them. Let's hear them. Okay, bring it. I want to know. Who's in there? What do you have to say? Let's get it out. And you only have 3 lines and 17 syllables. We don't want any no sorting problems here. I took Suzette and Kara's class on perspectives on depression, and it was amazing for me, the artwork that we did, and I took all my artwork into therapy. My artwork, I said here, it was powerful. I took the artwork into therapy and worked on it for weeks with Alexander. I was surprised and a little afraid of my drawings. I mean, I actually was a little afraid of the things I'd put together. So I wrote a haiku about it, art, mysterious life, uncover the forbidden while sketching my dreams. So I need to pay attention to time.
Is it the beginning of a new haiku?
Could be. Could be. What happened is, I wanted to tell you about the world channel and the relationship channel and what happened. What I originally was wanting to do something for my certificate project on my horse. I was into the Tao of Equi, and I thought, well, my horse is my secondary process. I'd like to do something on that. That seemed like something no one had done before. And Kate Jobe was my advisor, and she didn't think that was such a good idea. So she told me, wait till after the intensive and then come up with an idea. So after the intensive, that's when I decided to do the haiku thing. Okay. So I had the intensive in January and February, started my haiku project in March. I decided that's what I was going to do. It really changed. What happened is on July 4th, I fell off my horse. And they thought I had a broken scapula, but I didn't. It was just really, really badly, badly damaged, but not broken, and a concussion. And so suddenly, I've got all this pain, and the pain meds were not working. I had this pain, and it was keeping me awake at night. And I couldn't do anything because I had this terrible, I don't know if anyone's ever had back pain, but it's awful. So I had this horrible back pain and this confused head because of the concussion. And it's summertime and I couldn't do anything. And it was driving me crazy because I also had just recently done a paper on Jung and I wanted to find out, well, what's the meaning of this? Why is this happening to me? Why am I having all this pain and I fell off my horse and I can't get comfortable and I'm miserable? And I went on like that for a few days, and then suddenly it was like 3 a.m. and I woke up. I hardly was sleeping, but I woke up and I thought, I got a haiku. So I hadn't done any haikus in about a couple of months. So I pulled out my haiku and I worked on them till 3 a.m. I worked on them for 6 hours straight till 9 a.m. And the whole time I was working on my haiku, I didn't feel any pain. So what I did for the next 3 weeks is I wrote haikus and wrote haikus and wrote haikus. And I took all that physical pain I was having and I channeled it into my haikus. And I came up with the most disturbing haikus. I came up with things like, enough, don't even try it. These are my clear boundaries. You need to back off. And warning, feeling mean today. Who cares about the other? This is also me. And there was another one in there. Disturbance, I am so angry. You, get the hell out of here. I'm done with you. So you kind of get the group process idea of the whole thing? So I think I need to kind of wrap it up. So let's see, I'll just share a couple more. So can you see how the World Channel came in? The World Channel, I fell off my horse. Relationship world, I fell off my horse, and that sort of propelled my haikus to go to the more raw stuff, the deeper stuff, the stuff that I didn't usually feel comfortable talking about. I'll share my childhood dream with you. In my childhood dream, I woke up crying because a red devil had taken away all the colors from me. I was devastated by this, and my father held me as I cried, and he said, Mary, it's only a dream. I was 3 years old, and I wondered, what's a dream? Childhood dream, dreaming of devils, a battleground of power, I stand on both sides. And polarities, gentleness and love, this is also within me. And this too shall change. I think I don't really know what's happening when I write these haikus. I think it's a group process. It might be also some form of alchemy. But one thing I do know is that for me, it's a form of inner work. And when I do this, it takes me into another place. And it resolves things for me. It gives me a vehicle to connect with my deepest feelings and my lightest feelings. And that's what haiku is for me. So I think that I need to look at the top. Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you have some questions? Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much for presentation. I almost lose words because I'm also grown up in very corporate world, and my major was Jamil literature, and the Renku, the group form of, like, I think there is a very very few group, a poem written by group form in this world, but Renku is that Basho Matsuo was one of my intensive study in undergraduate.
Oh, wow.
And also, I like to add that Japanese transpersonal psychology top person, Ando, Mr. Ando, Dr. Ando, he wrote a book about Renku therapy. It's basically a haiku made by group therapy.
Wow.
So that was, yeah.
I should look into that.
Yes, that was like, I'm so like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah, thank you for telling me about that.
Welcome, thank you. Thanks for making it so, like, wow. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Sarah.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, Sarah.
I just want to thank you. This is really beautiful
Thank you.
To be here for this. And I just want to let you know that you've really inspired this front row, at least. We've all been like jotting down haikus while you've been talking.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's sort of like I've just noticed it really just being here kind of like gets me in touch with all the stuff that wants to emerge.
That's so great.
So it's cool.
That's so wonderful. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah, I'd like to share one.
Great. I was hoping.
Sitting in the crowd, I hear my forward journey laid out before me.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's beautiful. Very inspiring.
Thank you for coming. I appreciate
it. Yeah. And there was one with a picture of you when you were really small that really flirted with me. And since I happen to be holding the microphone,
the little 2-year-old.
To read it, yeah, and share it with us.
Did there was a 2-year-old one? Mm-hmm. That little one.
Yeah, black and white.
Yeah, black and white. That's an old one. Oh, wait, let's see. Oh, yeah. Okay, that was a deep one. Let's see. Here she is. Oh, okay. That's me at 2. 2. Me and my little doll. Let's search together. Let's search for the child. Listen carefully for tears. She is well hidden. But she's been found now. Thank you. Thank you for asking for that. Appreciate it. Kathy.
I just want to say you're like an incredible storyteller. I just feel like so gripped by this entire presentation, and I've been counting things I'm thinking. How many syllables is that?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
That was appreciate that.
Really, I'm blown away. Like, thank you so
thank
much
you.
For also sharing so openly about your life and your journey in this form. It's been amazing. Thank you.
Oh, I'm really touched. Appreciate it.
So thank you. Thank you so much, Mary.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
You hear me? Okay. Oh. Well, my name's John. I am in the certificate program, and I'm really kind of humbled by the quality of the presentation that just went in front of me here. Mine's a little bit more left brain, so be prepared for that side of things too. We want to have balance here, all right? Okay, so I'm here to balance the beauty that you just saw a little bit. As a matter of fact, my motivation is to actually help you make this process work stuff work for you in that world out there, that practical world. I worked at Bonneville Power, big federal agency for a long time. I got to a point where I was senior engineer and I was program manager, and I tried over and over and over again to become a supervisor, bid on these various jobs. and it's like I hit a glass ceiling. I was qualified, everybody liked me, but there was always somebody else hired. And I really respected the people that were doing the choosing. It wasn't like there was bad people in this game at all, but there was always somebody else that got the job. And I didn't exactly know what was going on. And finally, one of my friends said, "John, they don't know what to do with a shaman." That was kind of the title of this whole thing. They don't know what to do with a shaman. Well, so I think a little differently, even before I got into process work. That's why I got into process work, because I look at things a bit differently. And management kind of wanted something that was a little bit more vanilla. You know, they wanted something that they could trust. And they, because they didn't understand how to work with me in a way that they could make sure things got done. You know, the whole scene. So that's one story I wanted to start out with. Another story is I have a friend who graduated from the MACF program a while back. And he got through the program and he didn't have a sense of how to apply what he had learned in a job. And you know, we can give him at least half the credit for not making that bridge to the job. So I don't want to blame the whole process works thing. But I had the same feeling myself, that we didn't actually teach people how to get a job in process work. We taught them some really, really wonderful tools. So that was kind of in the back of my mind. And a third story that is along the same lines. I went to World Work last, May? Wonderful, wonderful thing. 7 days, immersion, lots of experiences, filled my journals with good stuff. Had lunch with a organizational development consultant, an established consultant, one that worked with business clients, and he had, you know, a similar experience about and really appreciating World Work, but couldn't figure out how to use those skills or whatever it is we were learning in World Work with his clients. And I had a little epiphany at that point that maybe we need to translate some of our World Work stuff into stuff that the business people can understand. And I don't remember the three things I wrote down except for the one. And that is that disturbance is maybe the same thing as a market opportunity. Make sense? If there's something going out there in the market that's kind of strange, that represents an opportunity. That's the kind of thing you can talk to a business person about. Now, I'm not in that kind of business. I just threw that out there and threw a couple other concepts out there, and he was appreciative. But that got me started on this whole idea that there's a whole, shall we say, vocabulary that you can translate this thought process work into and make it work for you. Well, you know, all that's kind of academic, and you can write things down on a piece of paper, this versus that, and all that sort of thing. And indeed, I got there. But I have to pay some dues. And I went into the certificate program, and it turns out, at the same time I went into the certificate program, I also started with this organization on their board of directors. As a matter of fact, I was elected president of the board, the Earth and Spirit Council. Fine organization, been around 20 years. Mission to encourage and support people in developing a healthy, sustainable relationship with the Earth. Now, I'm an environmentalist from way back. This appeals to me. It also has a kind of a spiritual side to it, which appeals to me also. So We have a couple programs. Earth Arts, where we work with kids to bring them in better connection with the earth through art, in better connection with nature through art. Here they're doing a storytelling play, kind of around the whole concept of Lewis and Clark coming over and Bear Spirit kind of introducing the people that are coming into this territory. And we have another program called Natural Way, which is a forum for carriers of Earth's wisdom, often Native American elders, who come and basically share what they've learned over a lifetime. And we do these talks every, well, like 4 or 5 times a year, and then we record them and put them on the internet and sell the DVDs. And beforehand, we do some drumming. And you see the drum there, and you see my wife over here, and she's sitting over here, and I want to give her some credit here for putting up with me, both in terms of my role on this organization and also in working with the Process Work Certificate program. She's definitely been a supporter. So that's kind of all by way of introduction and what I'm trying to do here. Now I have a little story to tell about, there's lots of things that I did in this organization over the last 2 years, and I'm still on the board. And I tried to get a sense of what would be useful to tell you. I can tell you a lot of stories about how I use process work, and maybe I'll get there. But I thought I'd focus on one story to show you how one process work term is used in the real world of that particular organization, In Search of Essence. And it's not a very long thing here, but the living through it was kind of long, actually. I'm going to get right to the heart of, right to the challenges here. These are disturbers. These are things that were happening that, you know, bugged the hell out of me. We had challenging board meetings. We had too much to do, and people wouldn't stop talking, and they didn't even want to increase the amount of time, and the people really needed to be heard. And the main thing I managed to pull off there was I gave somebody else the opportunity to facilitate, and they listened to her when she said time's up. They didn't listen to me when I said time's up. Okay, there's a whole story around that, but that whole challenge was there and it was chronic. Visioning. I love to look out into the future. I love to ask where we're going to be in 5 years. I love to ask what kind of an organization are we going to be? What kind of a world are we creating? I love that kind of stuff. We didn't have much of a vision that I knew of when I started, and you know, we kind of ground to a halt twice in the process of doing visioning. What is going on? You'd think somebody that's president could at least say we got to have a vision and let's sit down and do a vision, right? Well, we have persistent hypersensitivity. Little things are big. The challenge that I actually brought to this group, Arnie's organizational development case crystallization thing, was we had a video producer and a program director at odds with each other over a long period of time. What was going on? And the outcome of that, you know, at the end of the evening was, okay, one's kind of has this sort of artistic way of looking at things or feels that artistic need, and the other one has this business kind of need, and we need both of those, right? And the deal with it is get them in a big group and have us all own our artistic and our business sides so that it's not just them that are the problem. OK? Okay, I get it. That's deep democracy. Problem is, my executive team, what do we call ourselves? President, vice president, and treasurer, basically, they're not comfortable with getting people in a room where you just let loose the shackles. It's too dangerous, especially when you're already hypersensitive. I think that happens pretty regularly in lots of organizations. That has persisted. The most recent round of it, I made a suggestion. There was an opportunity for a grant application, pretty short timeline. I made some notes about how we might approach that, wrote somebody and said, you know, what do you think about this? And by the way, since the timeline's so short, you know, if we don't bid on it, that's okay. I got back a very terse reply that said something like, we need to review these things ahead of time. We can't look at these things. I needed to be consulted. It was all, my words were nicely written, but for some reason I got back that harsh reply from a person I call a friend who is a very nice person. Something's going on. It's had a couple people resign, and they had their complaints, and they had a bunch of them. Difficulty drawing an organizational chart. And by the way, this is spread over a year and a half. Okay, you're seeing me capsulize a lot of things here. So here's what I call a stereotypical organizational chart, right? You got the board up here, and you got committees, and you got programs, and you got volunteers and staff, and they all support what the board asks them to do. Well, and you'd say that the authority's kind of coming down from there. As a matter of fact, that's the law. The board is responsible by the state for everything that goes on in the organization. You can delegate it out, but they're responsible, right? Well, I started to act, by the way, we had a diagram that's somewhat similar to that, that's, you know, just specific to what we had. And frankly, I didn't ever liked it. And I didn't pursue it very much. And when I finally got around to drawing the diagram of here's how it really is, I found that our two programs were up on the top of this diagram, the advisory committee of one program and the director of the other program, basically running the organization. Here's the board down here. And one person actively says something along the lines of, the board exists to support the programs. Now, actually, in my New Age way of looking at things, that kind of makes sense. You know, these are the people that actually provide services to the community. The board sits in the room and no, it doesn't do any good at all if these people aren't successful. So in one sense, that does, you know, make some sense. But I actually found myself getting viscerally, I was mad when I finally wrote this down and was sharing this with my executive committee, because that's why we couldn't do any visioning. These people care mostly about their program. They don't care about the whole organization for the most part. Now, I'm overstating it a little bit, but their amount of energy that they can put to anything outside their organization, their program, is pretty limited. They also are pretty autonomous. They don't see the board serving them all that well. The fact that the board is looking out here at the grand world isn't all that interesting. So, let's see, where are we going here? lost some things here. Okay, so there's that diagram. Here's a couple things that kind of became, were apparent kind of early on that I saw as essence issues. One was, we have to somehow bridge the practical and the spiritual. If spirit isn't part of our name, we have to. And I'm not talking about religious kind of spirit, I'm talking about things like compassion and ability to have some fun and maybe a little art or ceremony in our board processes and so forth. That was kind of a challenge, but you know, we're trucking along trying to do that. But it didn't seem to solve the problem of what's really bugging things to make all those disturbances keep on disturbing. My vice president pointed out about 3-4 months ago that these are heart-driven people. They're not here just for a living. As a matter of fact, they don't make much money at all. And if you're gonna tell them what to do, you might shut them down. You got to be careful with people whose passion is this program. Well, so there's some essence issues there. You know, whole earth and spirit thing is save the world, okay? So there's some essence there, issues there. One of the things that we tried to do was get out of the highly agendized board meetings where we have step by step, like 5, 10, 15 minutes per item, and you work real hard for 3 hours and you get the items done and you kind of go home. We had focus board meetings, 1 2-hour session just on that, 1 2-hour session just on that, and this is planned. Preparing for this is where I started doing those diagrams and I started getting some insights. So that's good. And by the way, these were not driven towards coming to a decision at the end of the meeting. They were taking lots of notes and then assign somebody to go do that. We'll come back and we'll review it. That seemed to work pretty well. It's in process. We're okay. We're connecting. But when I got to the structure thing, I actually had another aha here. There are a couple other essence drivers. One was those autonomous programs are there for a reason. The organization was down to 2 people on the board at one point, and the program basically ran themselves. So now that we're up to 7 people on the board, they're still used to running themselves. And it's a lot hard, it's hard to go back home after you've been on the street for a while, if you want to use an analogy. The other thing is, so I would almost think of this as almost like a post-traumatic stress syndrome reality. After you've been a certain way, you don't change back all that easily. The other thing is that I realized that every program that this organization's had for the last 20 years has been an entrepreneurial program. Somebody had an idea and ran with it. Never in the life of the program did any, in the organization, did any program idea come from board deliberations. Aha. Well, I've been around organizational development long enough to know that when you start to run into the realities like this, you don't try to change them so much as you try to work with them. Okay, so shared leadership. This is stuff that you, to some extent, you already know about. You know, you want to move from control to support. Instead of directing people, you want to ask them, how can we do this kind of thing? Explanations don't work all that well, but they would like their barriers removed. Procedures, well, frankly, they sound like rules, and they're a problem, right? But if you can give them some guidelines and processes to show them how it's been done before so that you can repeat it so you don't have to reinvent the wheel so often, you're more able to support things. But here's where the real aha came for me. Instead of telling the programs to expand, because whoever's running the program basically does what they're wanting to do with the program as long as they're not getting in big trouble. And these programs are reasonably healthy. Let people start new programs. That's how we expand. That's a kind of a shift in paradigm that goes along with discovering essence. I'm trying to show you a little bit about how working with essence can yield a kind of a practical kind of outcome here. And here's something you'll like. Oops, we went from that kind of a, at least in our head paradigm, right, to this. Wow. Okay, you know, instead of, you know, yay board, putting them at the center where nobody really wants them, you know, boards do certain things that are actually fairly useful, like helping people come up with visions. Put the vision and the guidelines and maybe the mission kind of in the center, and understand that there is a whole plethora of things that don't need to be the same. You don't need to run this program the same way you run that program. This is a kind of a one-time thing. This thing has been going for ages, and this woman may take the program off and spin it off and make it a nonprofit on her own. Now we're starting to get into the mode of everybody's okay, even if they're not like us. So that's where we're going. This is still work in progress. I'm hoping by the end of my third year, we'll have that as a working reality. We're still gonna, I think the real nitty gritty work is to define the processes by which we get things done. Like, how does a grant application actually get done when you've got these various pieces? You know, you've gotta sort of figure that out so people don't stumble over each other and get undercut. So, okay, part of my role as president is I've got to actually let people know what our upcoming event is so you can be inspired to come. We're sponsoring Earth Day along with a bunch of other organizations. It's a two-day event, speakers, workshops, lots of fun, some ceremony at Portland Community College, Sylvania campus. So I hope to see one or two of you there at least. So that's a little story of how I use the process work and how I give you a feel what's going on. But what I'd like to do now is actually get down right left brain for a minute here. And that will require me to shift gears and to your handout. So you can kind of look at that handout you have, the big table there. And I will try to bring it up here. Okay, so translating between process work and organizational development. I took notes all along the way of this tenure. I've been basically president about as long as I've been in the certificate program, so it just happens that way. And the examples I have here are the real world examples I experienced in this one organization. Some of you who have been around quite a while have worked out a lot of this already. Maybe you'll get some more out of it, but I want to just kind of show how some of the things we're actually doing in process work, I've been doing out there in the real world, and I've been using this kind of language with my people, so to say. I don't have much of a pointer here, but I guess, I don't have time to go through the whole table. You can look at it. It's interesting. The one that I would like to actually spend a moment with is deep democracy down there. because I guess I already said this idea that unrestricted conversations may be perceived as too dangerous. Well, what do you do? Well, there are all sorts of ways of having conversations. And to whatever extent you have power to influence things, you use them. We did mediation. We did a conversation cafe at a retreat. Anytime I can get two people to talk about the real issues going on, or anytime I'd hear it, I would encourage it, I would celebrate it. And there's committee dialogues, and what's the one underneath that? You get the idea. Focus board meetings, okay? So I guess my point here is, take, you know, when we have these chaotic deep democracy things in the room here, I haven't seen a lot of that actually work out there. This is the kind of stuff that is acceptable out there and you can make happen, but you may have to be a lot more patient. It doesn't get over with in an hour or two. And another thing I would say is, if you don't integrate it, if you don't follow up with these conversations with the real work of putting it all together afterwards and checking back in and all that, whatever resolutions you have are often temporary. So, so my point isn't that I've got a great table. You can take it. Maybe you can find some useful things there. That's a gift I have from you. What I would like to do for a couple minutes is actually do some things that aren't on the table. And I'm going to, well, here, let's just do this. I would like to name a process work term and have some of you kind of come back to me with what are the terms that the outer world out there can use. So for instance, the word edge, you know, this idea that, well, if I start explaining it, I'm going to be using those other world terms. Give me some words or phrases for edge that you could actually talk to the person next door about.
You could say pushing outside your comfort zone.
Pushing outside your comfort zone. Good. You know, remember, these are... Okay, we can come up with at least three.
Think of, there is expression, thinking outside of the box.
Think outside the box.
Edge can
okay.
Be like,
okay.
Edge can be like edge of the box or something.
Right. So we all... The world out there knows that, you know, it's a little uncomfortable outside the box, so it's easy to talk about the idea at least. Okay?
Another phrase comes, be on the ropes, like in boxing. Be on the ropes.
Like be on the rope?
On the ropes, like in boxing.
Uh-huh.
That means somebody is thrown towards the ropes of the ring.
Yeah. Being on the ropes.
Yeah.
Oh, you're actually on the, okay. You're up against the wall. Okay, you get the idea. Let's try the word meta skill. It's one of our favorite things, right? How would we talk about meta skill to that?
The emotional intelligence.
Great.
Unseen power.
Unseen power?
Like hidden talents or something.
Okay. I wrote down here nonviolent communication. Okay, now some of your people won't talk that language either, so not all of these words can be used in it everywhere. And then I went through Amy's book and just looked at her table of contents. You know, playfulness, detachment. You know, these are meta skills that are really pretty easy to understand without us having to try to sell people on the concept of meta skill. Okay. How are we doing? Okay. Non-local reality. Non-local reality, okay? Now, when I first ran into that, I wasn't sure I believed it, right?
Yeah, I think you should just skip that one. Don't get into it.
Non-local reality. Well, you know, I did a little homework on that.
What?
The market?
The market.
The space out there? Okay, I use some terms like these times. You know, these times, you know, we're in the 21st century now. That's different than the 20th century. We're in the digital age.
Friend of market.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The term intuition, you know, some people can buy into that, some people can't, but that's that. Okay, you get the idea. And I'm going to kind of wind up with the term integration. Integration. Now, that wasn't even brought up in any of the classes that I can remember. Integration. What are some terms that would be... Does anybody tell me a phrase that defines integration?
More functional organization.
Making something practical.
Making it practical. Okay, good.
It works more, better.
More and safer?
Works better.
Okay.
More functional.
Yeah, practical application.
Practical applications. Good.
Change.
Yeah.
Organizational.
Organizational change. Good. Okay. I wrote down things like making it real, walking the talk, putting a foundation under the castle. Yeah. So, okay. So, I guess I have 2 points at the end of this little thing here, which is, one is for the students to make it a point to learn some of this stuff while you're doing your classes and such, because most of us are going to want to make some sort of a living. And I'm part of my agenda is to make this process work, something that's way beyond just this box we're living in, okay? Of course, you know, my experience with Earth and Spirit, my agenda isn't necessarily what happens, except that maybe if I can inspire people, then maybe they can make it happen. Because it's not local. Okay. The other thing is, for those who teach process work, I think that it would be good if there were some teaching along how to do this kind of stuff inside the seminars. Most of the seminars I run into are exercises and maybe 3 to 5 main points. I would like to see some, you know, applying process work. My first title for this talk is They Don't Know What to Do with a Shaman. My second title is Applying Process Work. So I think that's room for improvement in the program. Got a few minutes for questions?
Yes, at least in Portland, there's one person who, I think company name or her title is Corporate Shaman. So
Corporate Shaman.
Yeah, some people are trying and it's like working, at least one person in Portland.
Well, I have to wear different clothes when I go into those kind of jobs myself.
John, I'm curious about the first one about vector walking. In your work that you've done in that organization that you're on the board of, president of the board, have you actually used that and tried that with them, and how did it work?
No, I have done that entirely on myself. Before I would prepare for a difficult phone conversation, I would walk walk a little ways and there be in them, and then walk a little ways being myself, and I'd find that common ground we'd have, and that's where I'd start the conversation with them. So no, I didn't actually, same thing with process mind. Those two I use basically 100% solo work in dealing with the tough stuff I was running into.
What do you think, I mean, of those two, do you think that there would be a way for you, I mean, especially in that organization, that you could use that with board members or with, you know?
So far, what I've been able to do is basically describe the results of a vector walk, of describing, well, for instance, we had, we're working with a shamanic group of women called the 13 Grandmothers, and they got upset with our release statement. It was kind of a dominant world, we own everything kind of release statement when they did a talk. And we had this conversation coming up with them, and I did a little walk, and I realized that they're the ones that really know what they're talking about. What we have to offer is we offer a venue, a place. And what we get from working together is an event. Okay. Now, when I did this, it had a lot more bells and whistles and feeling associated with it. But I could go in there and I could talk to them about how do we make this event happen because we got to work together. Okay. And I could explain to them what I learned in my vector walk, but I didn't make them walk it. So I'm not saying I can't do it, but I am saying that I haven't figured out a way to go there given who I am and who I'm talking to. I've, by the way, I have done it with friends, but that's outside of this this whole scene. Let's see if I can get that back. Yeah, okay. So I have found that process mind and vector walks kind of cover some of the same ground, but process mind I've used for much deeper complex stuff that seemed intractable. And I will share the one story that, no, actually it was in Dreamland. I did some drumming. Before, I had this problem with a woman who was the founder of the organization. She seemed to be undercutting me a bit. And again, this is a person that I call a friend. Well, she's a founder. When she says something, people listen. She's the person that can run the meeting without anybody interrupting her. Well, I had a problem because I still have this role as president. So I had to talk with her, and I did the drumming, and I got into this altered space and so forth, and I realized, and out of that came visualizing myself as an eagle, which is fine for a president, right? And herself as a scorpion, which is her totem. She's close to the earth. She's right where it's happening. She does not need any process whatsoever to get things done. I'm up here, I'm looking at the horizon and all that. We need to work together. And when I shared those pair of images with her, we just clicked at that point. And when she wants to get something done, she checks in with me. And when I've got this big picture, I make sure that she knows about it so we don't, you know. So that's, again, I guess I'm using these here. Actually, I'm using a lot of this as my personal work. But I'm bringing in the skills into my intentions, my the things I'm lobbying for, rather than asking them to accept anything outside of their boxes, way outside their boxes. And I would especially when you're talking about a new client that doesn't know you as a person, they're going to have something they're comfortable in as a starting point. Yes.
My name.
I'm Wendy.
Hi, Wendy.
I just wanted to say thank you for the topic.
I actually, it would be helpful if I heard that because my hearing's not so great.
Okay, great. I just wanted to say thank you for the topic. I think you're speaking to something that
maybe a marginalized issue, and I haven't experienced it so much trying to do organizational development work. I sort of ad lib in those moments, but I have certainly had experiences of going to workshops and bringing friends from my work world or whatnot, and a presenter will go on about non-local reality and talk about the relevance of like something totally random that they like walked past on their way to the workshop,
mm-hmm.
and the people that I'm bringing have no idea what they're talking about, and just feeling disoriented, or I'm noticing myself grateful for the combination of this presentation with the group process on shamanism a little bit ago or the other day, that I have a voice inside me that has, like, I have a hard time accepting it or making a translation sometimes. And when I'm bringing in people, when I'm trying to expand process work and integrate my world and other people into it, and we don't actually make these things clear or build bridges, it can be very alienating. And it can be, I feel like we sometimes lose people because we haven't built effective bridges, or we talk about things in such a extraterrestrial, extraworldly way that people who are not familiar with process work can relate to. And so basically I just want to say, wow, it's nice to have some voice to this experience. Thank you for the thought that you've put into it, and I hope it becomes a bigger conversation.
Thank you, thank you. Maybe that's a good place to let it go. did you want to say something? I mean, I don't want to cut you off.
Hi, John. Thanks for the, and everybody, thanks for the conversation. It's so loud. I think I wanted to appreciate also the passion for bridging the worlds. I think you're talking about shamanism and corporate reality, and also how to make process work more accessible, and the bridge between the mainstream and the process work as well. And I know myself, I can only speak to that. I'm sure there's many different experiences around that, but I think myself, I sometimes feel shy about my own shy about my own passion for process work, and then I get I get nervous and don't share my knowledge. So I hear your invitation to come out more, and I appreciate that.
Well, I'm also just saying you can come out more. You know, you just may have to use the language that they're comfortable with. Yeah. Okay. Oh, it's 9 o'clock. I'm fine. I got to leave at 9:15. But are we okay? Oh. Okay. Thank you.